We'll proceed to the second case of the day, United States v. Garcia. Mr. Jensen.
And if it pleases the court, my name is Jeffrey Jensen. I represent the appellee, Armando Garcia, who was convicted of possessing 4 kilograms of cocaine with intent to distribute after a jury trial last summer. But the issue that we're here to argue about today has to do with the issuance of a search warrant. In late October of 2006, the Milwaukee police were investigating drug dealing in Milwaukee. And as part of that, they developed a confidential informant. And Detective David Baker interviewed this confidential informant. And according to the affidavit that was filed in support of the search warrant, this confidential informant told Detective Baker that within 72 hours prior to the interview, he had been in a residence that the confidential informant said belonged to Armando Garcia. And while he was in this residence, he saw cocaine in a plastic baggie in the living area. And that was the extent of it. Based on those custom allegations, if you will, a search warrant was issued. And the reason I say custom allegations is because the affidavit was 4 pages long, but 98% of it was boilerplate language having to do with Detective Baker's experience.
I agree that that fill-in-the-blank application here was not very good, and I wouldn't recommend it. But I don't know how, in this case, you can get around Leon if police go to the commissioner here and present that, and the commissioner signs off on it. I don't see how we could find that they didn't act in good faith.
Well,
even if you win on the merits, on the underlying lack of probable cause demonstrated in the warrant, it looks like it's a good faith effort by the police to follow the law. And the issuing commissioner here was the one who might have been guilty of not having asked enough questions or required more in the affidavit.
Well, and I think your question, Judge, goes to the very recent decision this court issued in McIntyre. After we filed our briefs, the McIntyre case was decided, which said that where you're arguing about the sufficiency of an affidavit where a search warrant is issued, the appeals court must grant great deference to the finding of the commissioner in this case. And when I read that, I was set back, because for years we had this two-pronged analysis. One is a de novo review of the probable cause, and then second of all, a review of whether the officers acted in good faith. But the more I thought about it, the more the McIntyre case made a lot of sense to me, because what I believe it is sort of a merging of these two standards, and there's no point in having a de novo review if, when we move on to the second prong, we're talking about the good faith. Now, the good faith exception applies, or at least creates a presumption of good faith, unless I can show one of three things. One is that the commissioner was acting as a rubber stamp. Two, that the agents were lying in the affidavit. Or three, that this affidavit was so flimsy that no reasonable person could think that that establishes probable cause. Well, in my experience, I have never had occasion to accuse a magistrate of being a rubber stamp, not doing what they're supposed to do, so that hardly ever comes up. If I have reason to believe that the agents are lying in their affidavit, I think that's a different sort of motion that gets filed. So 99% of these situations have to do with whether the affidavit is so flimsy. And, Judge, I believe that this affidavit is, in fact, so flimsy, and barring the language, the last paragraph of McIntyre, could a sensible magistrate have thought that this was probable cause to search the residence if they were thinking about it and applying the rules? And I have to say no, because when
Barry Slagle, that was the
Barry Slagle, yes.
Was he a former public defender?
He was, yes.
I recall.
Yes.
So he's somebody who I would think would be sympathetic to the rights of defendants.
Well, as long as we're discussing it, it doesn't seem like the former defense lawyers are sympathetic to the other defense lawyers. they assume the bench and suddenly are more scrupulous and difficult to work with than the prosecutors ever were. But in any event, as long as we're talking about what goes on in the Milwaukee County Courthouse, these court commissioners who are signing these affidavits are multitasking. They're listening to preliminary hearings. They're running over to small claims court. And in between doing all of that, they're presented with these affidavits, which, as the Seventh Circuit mentioned in McIntyre, it's an ex parte application to a person who is very busy doing other things.
I'm curious about this, too. I'm kind of new to this end of the business. And is this Milwaukee PD form number 14 or something? Do you see this same form in lots of cases?
Yes. I don't know what the form number is, but it's very routine for police detectives to have these sorts of affidavits and then fill in the information. Very common.
Similar lines or fill-in spots on the affidavits.
Exactly. And so I was discussing that, was this affidavit so flimsy that the commissioner, no sensible commissioner could have found probable cause? And I think the answer is yes, because it basically, if you strip away the three and three quarters pages of boilerplate language, you have a confidential informant saying to the detective, I was in our Garcia's house, and I think I saw cocaine in there.
Oh, you said I saw cocaine.
Okay, I saw cocaine. The reason I said I think I saw cocaine is because I don't care how many years you've been dealing drugs, how much cocaine you've sold or used, I have my doubts about whether you can even say to a reasonable probability that a white powder in a baggie is cocaine. Now, there certainly are circumstances that could have been set forth in the affidavit that would make that a reasonable determination, such as Garcia told me it was cocaine. I tried some of it, and it seemed like it was cocaine. Something of that nature. But just seeing a white powder in a baggie somewhere in the living area, I don't think, even if this person is deemed to be reliable and credible and his story is plausible and everything else, that rises to the level of probable cause to believe that this actually was cocaine.
We wouldn't have look-alike prosecutions if you could just tell on sight.
I'm sorry?
We wouldn't have look-alike prosecutions if you could tell on sight whether something was a drug or not.
Well, that's right. And as it happens, a white powder, there are so many things that are also white powders. Powdered sugar, baby powder, salt.
You don't happen to have that affidavit with you, do you?
I do, yes.
I want to ask you about paragraph 9 of that affidavit, where the affiant says that he believes, based on the affiant's conversation with the informant, affiant's personal observation of the appearance of the substance and the manner in which the substance was packaged, that the aforementioned substance is cocaine. That suggests that the affiant saw the substance, doesn't it?
Well, I think it goes beyond suggesting it. It says that he did see it, the appearance of this of the substance.
That's the detective.
What I read is that the affiant believes, based on the affiant's conversation with the informant, affiant's personal observation of the appearance of the substance. I see what you're saying. That is what the affidavit says.
Is that a false statement in that affidavit?
Well, it would appear to be, yes, because...
But there was no Franks motion made here.
That Franks was not part of it, no. No,
that's
Frank,
one of the dangers of using one of these forms, because obviously he's talking about what the undercover person observed and not what he personally observed.
Exactly. I mean, yes, that's exactly right. but it really is along the same lines of the point I was trying to make. How does anybody determine that a white powder in a baggie is cocaine just by looking at it? So that's the first reason why why probable cause is not stated in the affidavit. The second reason is, even if we could just arguendo assume that this was cocaine, the confidential informant did not tell Detective Baker, or if he did tell it, it didn't find its way to the affidavit, how much of this substance he saw. Was this a kilogram of cocaine? Was this an ounce of cocaine? Was this a gram of cocaine? Or was this some residue in the corner of a baggie? And that, the amount of the cocaine, is critical to the determination of whether this substance will still be in the house 3 days later. In Peck and in Owen, both of those confidential informants told the detective that this was a large amount of marijuana or a large amount of cocaine. And from that, I think a reasonable inference is that if it's there on Monday, it'll probably still be there on Thursday. But if this was a minuscule amount of cocaine in the corner of a baggie, it's very unlikely that that would still be there 3 days later. Now, the government says that my questions were sarcastic and things of that nature, but I didn't really intend them to be sarcastic as much as rhetorical. I mean, if you don't tell us what the amount of cocaine is, how can you say an inference that it was any certain amount is reasonable? It's not, because you can't give a reason for drawing that inference. And as the courts have said, where a search warrant is issued on the basis of an affidavit, the affidavit stands on its own. We can't start speculating as to what reasons Detective Baker might have had for not including all of the details. And I'll reserve the remainder for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Jensen. Ms. Jacobs.
Excuse me. May I please go to the court? Good morning, Your Honors. I'm going to start with Judge Evans, your question, that is sort of how you would not apply Leon in a case like this, and I don't think there's really a way to do that. One of the last paragraphs of Leon talks about when there is disagreement among, I think the terminology is, competent and reasonable jurists or judges on the issue of probable cause for a search warrant, it's hard to ask a police officer in the first instance to have made the determination that the issuing judge was incorrect. And in this case, especially given the standard of review that now is applied, you have a court commissioner who found probable cause. You have a federal magistrate judge, Judge Goodstein, who thought that probable cause was not established. You have a district court judge.
By the way, his report and recommendation was not in any of the briefs here. It's in the record, I assume.
It is in the record. And then, as I was going to say, Judge Randa found that there was probable cause. So whether anyone or all three of you or anyone else would find in the end that probable cause was not established, I think this is sort of a good demonstration of exactly what the Supreme Court was talking about in Leon, and that is, should Detective Baker have known in the first instance that probable cause was not established? Now, with respect to probable cause, I am not going to suggest that these forms are a good idea. They are. We see them with some regularity from the Milwaukee Police Department, and mistakes certainly can be made. I think, Judge Evans, your construction of that paragraph that your question raised is correct, and that is, it's a form problem, and really what they're talking about is the informant's discussion. I think that's the way the paragraph starts in paragraph 9, and based on the discussion with the informant and the informant's observations that they believed it to be cocaine. But again, I'm not going to disagree with you that it is a problem with the form.
And you could correct that real quickly by declining cases that are brought over from Milwaukee PD using such form.
We certainly could, and I think that there are instances where that is done. I mean, certainly our office, when a case like this, when it's a discrete case, a possession with intent case or something like that, is brought in, we're reviewing the documents. But again, I think it's also...
Is the Milwaukee DA's office involved in these issuances of these warrants?
I know they are sometimes, but
They weren't at the time. This used to be just the police department's... paperwork that would go to the court commissioner.
Right. I am certain that they are involved some of the time. I mean, I've been involved in cases where the DA's office has been involved, but I don't want to say that that's the case all of the time. because I just don't know. But even with respect to them bringing cases to us, I think it's important that we also give some regard to the fact that the police, in an instance like this or any other, have sought a search warrant rather than consent, rather than exigent circumstances arising from, you know, an informant going in, coming right back out, and the police at the door. They took the time to get a search warrant. At least two judges thus far believe that probable cause has been established. So whether or not in the end this court finds that probable cause was lacking or the search warrant form certainly was lacking, I would submit that there is just no way around, and there shouldn't be a way around in this case, Leon. Now, I know that the appellant here has not addressed the other two issues. I'm happy to answer any questions about those issues, although I would say that those two issues, as well as the search warrant issue, in many respects in this instance, turns on the standard of review, and that is abuse of discretion. And I would submit that the court has not abused its discretion in any regard on any of these issues. And unless the court has questions, I would ask that the judgment be affirmed.
Thank you, Ms. Jacobs. Mr. Jensen?
Thank you.
Two points made by the government that I would like to respond to, and the first one is that almost ipso facto, we haven't met the McIntyre standard because several jurists have looked at this and come to competing conclusions. And the first thing I want to point out to the court is that at page 3 of Judge Randa's decision, I think he was somewhat reluctant to rubber stamp this affidavit. He says, while there wasn't direct corroboration of the informant's statements, the totality of the circumstances viewed from a practical rather than a technical perspective suggests a finding of probable cause. And then he moves on to the good faith exception. So the only person really, the only jurist, should we say, is Commissioner Slagle. And we've already discussed the circumstances under which he made the finding. He's busy doing other things, and it's an ex parte determination. The second thing is that this court should, in effect, reward Detective Baker for taking the time and the trouble to go get a search warrant. And especially now in light of McIntyre, I think that the court needs to look carefully at that, because in reality, if the police go search a house without a warrant, it's subject to a de novo review by this court or any court. And so the police are likely to be very careful about where they go searching without a warrant. But if you show up in the preliminary hearing court in the Milwaukee County Courthouse with one of these form affidavits and you give it to a busy court commissioner who may not have time to really digest carefully what is in the affidavit, you now become suppression proof, in effect, unless we give some meaning to this idea that the court said in McIntyre that good faith is, or that the standard of appellate review is whether a reasonable, sensible jurist could have come to that conclusion. And I think here the answer is no.
Thank you, Mr. Jensen. Thanks to both counsel. Mr. Jensen, the court wants to give you an additional thanks for accepting this appointment and ably representing the defendants.
My pleasure.